The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Andrew Miller. Most people call me Andy. I'm 85 years old, and I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico, or have for many years. My Army time, I joined the Army in 1941, in July 1941. In fact, July 23rd, to be exact. And I walked off the ship in Manila on the 28th of August, 1941. A month and 5 days after I enlisted, which must be one of the fastest trips by anybody.
Let's go back to the United States of 39-40, before the war. Tell us what you remember. What were the things about life in the States during that time that you always carry with you?
Those were the Depression years. I'd graduated from high school in 1938. And the Depression in 1938 was as bad as it was in 1930. As I remember it, at least the neighborhood I lived in, was a compassionate neighborhood. When people would be in trouble, other people in the neighborhood would take care of them, which was a vast difference from when I came home to the States. So, yeah, it was a very enjoyable life. You didn't have much. But you didn't need much.
What prompted you to enlist?
Well, I'd gone to school for the year before, 1940 and 41. I went to MIT in Massachusetts. But my father became very ill, and he couldn't afford to send me there again. So I went and enlisted. And unfortunately, he died in December of 43. And I didn't find out about that until September 45.
What was your branch of service?
I enlisted in the Air Corps and was assigned to Nichols Field.
Mm-hmm. And back then that was still the Army Air Corps?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you probably had the same experience that a lot of the men did. Was the East Coast home for you at that time? Or you were out of...
No, my home was in Nebraska.
In Nebraska at that point. Mm-hmm. And so did you ship out of San Francisco, Angel Island as well?
Yes. Okay. Everybody that would go overseas went to Angel Island.
Angel Island. And it's still there in one form or another. Mm-hmm. So, and then you arrived in Manila in August?
August 28th, 1941.
What was your first impression of the Philippines when you hit land again?
Hot and humid.
You mean as a Nebraska boy, you weren't used to all that humidity?
Yeah, but not that much.
And then what was life like when you hit your duty base again? Most of the men that we've talked to had absolutely no basic training until they hit the island.
No, I'd had a lot of basic training of one kind or another.
Did you?
I'd gone to the CMTC camps. These were called Citizens of Military Training Camps. There was a program started in, I think, the early 20s, and you went to camp a month or 30 days a year. It was in the summertime. And I went for 3 years, and I got all kinds of infantry training. And I went to a base called Fort Crook, which was south of Omaha, and that's now known as Offutt Air Force Base. So I had plenty of training.
Basic training.
And when I went to MIT, I took ordnance courses in the ROTC program, so I knew quite a bit about ordnance.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was your duty assignment in the Philippines?
Basically, guard duty.
Guard duty, okay. And were you on the peninsula, or were you in Corregidor?
No, I was in Manila until the war started.
Until the war started.
Well, at Nichols Field, which is just south of Manila.
Nichols, I'm sorry. You
and
did
it's
say that.
Adjacent to Fort McKinley.
Mm-hmm. Let's fast forward a little bit into the days just before December 7th. When did you first become aware of the fact that war was probably imminent?
It was the day after Thanksgiving, 1941. They called us out in front of the barracks, told us to bring our training gas masks and to turn them in and get regular issue gas masks and to break them out of the tins. And then they also gave us live ammo and told us to be prepared to leave the barracks at any time.
Mm-hmm. What was the conversation among the men at that point?
People weren't too concerned.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Then... Which would have been the evening of the 6th for you, or was it the 7th of December?
Oh, on the 7th of December, I had to go on guard duty at midnight, so I went to the theater to see the first half of Gone with the Wind, and I had to wait almost 4 years to see the second half.
What do you remember? I think everybody remembers where they were on December 7th. What do you remember? And what was the atmosphere like at that point?
Well, it'd be December 8th for us. The sergeant of the guard picked me up at my guard post at 6 o'clock in the morning and told me that they had hit Pearl Harbor about 3 hours earlier. And we were all dumbstruck. We couldn't figure out how they could do that. If we'd been on alert since the day after Thanksgiving, we couldn't figure out how they could be that lax.
Mm-hmm. And then not much more than a day after that, the Japanese started their campaign against the Philippines.
Oh, I don't think it was that fast. I think they went all the way up to... it was a few days afterwards, but they landed at a Perry.
Okay.
Now, they made air raids. The earliest air raid was at Camp John Hay, which is up at Baguio. I don't think they hit it very hard, but the place they really hit hard was Iba, which is on the coast, the west coast of Luzon. The 3rd Pursuit Squadron was there. They were up there for gunnery training, and they just tore them up.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first real bad raid. And that was followed by the raid at Clark's Field.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do very well either, but people were packed in there. They had a lot of out troops up there. Fort Stauffenberg and Clark Field were adjacent to each other. They did not hit Manila or any of the bases in Manila on that first day. And the first raid they made on Manila was early in the morning on the 9th of December. They had a four-plane raid, hit Nichols Field. They damaged a few buildings on the VOQ, hit one of the hangars. A couple of men were killed, and that was it. The next day, everybody was dispersed all around the base. They took people off the buildings or off of the barracks, places like that. And they hit the place about noon on the 10th. And I can remember I was south of the base. I was sitting up against a big log and I watched this whole thing. Airplanes diving on the place, on the roads, shooting up everything. And it was like an air circus.
Hmm.
It was like a big show.
Mm-hmm.
Only it was for real.
Mm-hmm. And... was there an air response, or was our Air Force fairly well incapacitated from the beginning?
Well, they had a fighter squadron there, the 17th Pursuit Squadron. They had gotten into the air. You have to realize the air defense was essentially zilch or none. And they had no real time frame to work on. The fighter planes went up, and... they had come down to refuel at about the same time the raid hit the base. I saw one of them, one of our planes, came almost overhead from me with a zero right on his tail. and you was so close you could hear the bullets hit the airframe.
Right.
And so they wiped out a good part of the 17th. But the whole thing had to be because they didn't have any sort of time frame to work on.
What was the size of the air complement in the Philippines? Do you know?
Oh, they had five pursuit squadrons, and supposedly they were all organized in what was so called the 24th pursuit group, and they had the 19th bomb group, which but that included the B-18s. They had a few of those, and the B-17s. They had a second observation squadron. Other than that, they didn't really have much of anything. But they lost so many of them just because they couldn't seem to coordinate any of the activities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're hearing that more and more from a lot of the survivors, is the communication was very poor, and the right hand didn't seem to know what the left hand was quite doing at that time. But
and the command was in a funny state. They were in the midst of changing a command. They were trying to establish what was called the 5th Bomber Command and the 5th Fighter Command. This would eventually end up being the 5th Air Force. And the command in the Philippines before the war was usually made up of men who were over there to retire, just to put in time to retire.
Who were your superior officers, Andy?
Oh, the only ones I knew were really just two men, the squadron commander, and he didn't survive the war. And there was a group commander, a Major Maverick from Texas, naturally, with that name. And he didn't survive the war either.
He didn't survive the war either. How long before the initial attack, or about how late after the initial attack, was it before you had to abandon Nichols and move?
Oh, it was almost immediately. We didn't abandon Nichols Field. We just moved to areas on Nichols Field that didn't have any concentration of buildings or airplanes, things like that.
Mm-hmm. And then as far as the rest of hostilities, what was the time sequence there?
Well, I used to go into Manila at night, and I'd go down to the YMCA because I could get a bed down there. and then I'd have to come back and take my... They had some gun positions around the base, and I'd take my turn at the gun position. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the way I lived.
And those were anti-aircraft guns, or these were just emplacements?
They were machine guns, 30 caliber machine guns. You might as well use spitballs, just as effective.
And then were you taken prisoner, or were you part of the delaying action that went back into the peninsula?
Oh, yeah. We started, we abandoned Nichols Field on Christmas Eve.
Of 41.
41.
Mm-hmm.
Made our way down to the port area, and we were put aboard the SS, or it's a motor ship, Mactan, which was an inter-island steamer, they call them. And I guess we left there about midnight. Woke up in the morning, we were in Maravales Harbor. And that's the extreme southern tip of Bataan. We got off the ship, and for some reason, I can't remember how we got off the ship. And I've asked other people, and they can't seem to remember either. But I do remember when we got off, they gave us an orange. That was Christmas dinner. And we were told to assemble at kilometer marker 144 to 145, that the outfit would be there. Well, some of them came down to the peninsula by truck. They brought food and various things. And some of us went by this Mactan, this boat. And eventually the outfit got together, most of them. And we stayed there just a few days. And then they moved us to another kilometer marker, 144, 145, 154, 155. Mm-hmm. It's what they call Little Baguio. Eventually they built a hospital there. And we stayed there for maybe a week or so. And then they informed us that we were being converted to infantry. And we became a part of what was called the Provisional Air Corps Regiment. And we were stationed or located at Sector B in the 2nd Corps. And what would eventually be the final primary line or main line of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
But when we got there, we were told to dig foxholes, gun positions, string wire, all that sort of thing, which we did for, we moved up there about the 15th of January, 1942.
Okay.
We'd been there for a week or so, and we pulled out and went up north to where there was a wing-ding battle starting. That was called the Abukai Hacienda Battle. And we moved to the left flank, and I remember I was on an advance party. We went up to the Abo River and stayed there for some 3 days and then came back. Eventually, on the 22nd of January, we moved back to our original positions. We were directly west of the town of Orion on Bataan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we strung some more wire and a few other things, and then that position became the main line of resistance on the 26th of January, 42.
How big a complement of men were in those companies? Do you remember?
In my company, we had 184 to start with. I would think on Bataan, in that position west of Orion, we probably had 160 men left. Some of them were expert in one way or another with the aircraft, and they were taken down to Cab Cabin or Bataan Fields.
Mm-hmm. But that was the last defensive perimeter then?
Right.
Okay. And how long did that was January. The peninsula didn't fall until April of 42.
Yeah.
So they were able to hold out in those fixed defensive positions for 3 months?
Yeah, we didn't move out till 10 o'clock in the morning on the 7th of April. And they were right in front of us at the time.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about the fighting that occurred in those 3 months. What do you remember there?
There wasn't very much, really. Most of it was patrol actions.
Mm-hmm.
We would send patrols out. The worst thing that happened at about that time was on somewhere in the vicinity of 6th or 8th of January, the order came down to cut your rations. Let's see, they'd give you 2 meals a day at a half ration per meal, which is equivalent of 1 meal per day. Now, we'd get them just at sunup and just at sundown, we'd get the meals. But they cut the rations again around the 1st of February and again around the 1st of March. And now General Wainwright supposedly ordered the 26th Cavalry slaughtered, and we could eat the horse meat. And they also ate the mules from a pack outfit. But there weren't that many horses or mules to go around.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while, you'd capture a carabao.
Which was a type of buffalo. So
it's a water buffalo, yeah. People don't know why they call them water buffalo, but they don't drink water. They only absorb it through their skin.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And so every so often after you work them, you have to take them over to a wallow and let them wallow around in it and absorb the water.
Mm.
But the meat isn't too bad. After a while, it tastes like the best prime rib you ever had.
And so in April, the Bataan Peninsula surrenders. Tell me a bit about what that was like in terms of your capture and what transpired after that.
Well, let me go back a little bit.
All right.
To around the 1st of March. Bataan was a heavy malarial province. And as soon as we got down there in January, they started to give us quinine with each meal, a little tablet of quinine. This was to act as a prophylactic treatment. And it was fine. It did the job. But around the 1st of March, they ran out of quinine. And then some 75 to 80% of the men came down with malaria in one form or another. Now, we'd been underfed, and now most of the men were sick. And as time went on, that didn't do us any good. And when we pulled out around the 7th, on the 7th of April, we were not in much of a good shape. And by the way, many of the men had been lost by then, not so much by enemy fire or anything like that. They were just flat out sick from one thing or another. Now, as for myself, I lost 35 pounds in those few months. Mm. And I wasn't feeling too good.
How much did you weigh when you entered the service? Do you remember?
about 175 to 180. And when we pulled out, I weighed 135. Mm. And it didn't get any better.
So April comes, you're taken prisoner at that point?
No. We got down to a position on, they tried to make a big position line or a resistance line. Oh, it was somewhere in the vicinity of Lamau. And that didn't seem to work too well. And by this time, the Japs had brought up quite a bit of artillery. And they were hammering us. And we lost some men in that conflict. And so eventually some of us just left. They had no control of anything. Mm-hmm. I got together with some men on the night of the 9th. And we were, I don't know exactly where we were. I know we were south of that main, off of that main road towards the bay area. And they had an earthquake that night. It was enough. I was laying on the ground and it rolled me over. And then in addition to that, they were blowing up some of the ammo dumps. And I couldn't even tell where they were, ahead of us or behind us, but they'd shake the ground. And when it got light, there was four of us that were together. One of them went up to the road and found out they were arranging surrender. So we made our way down to the bay, found an old banca, a dugout canoe, but it only had one outrigger. So we went up and down the beach, found a piece of bamboo, and there were a lot of telephone lines running along the beach. So we cut some of the wire and used that to tie the outrigger on it. And I would guess about 11 o'clock in the morning, we started our way to try to get to Cregador, primarily because we'd heard they had food over there. And, we got a little ways off of shore. And you could look back on Bataan, and it was a mess. Mm-hmm. Smoke, bombing, a lot of noise. And Cregador had a lot of smoke and dust on it as well. And in the water, there were sharks all over the place. And the airplanes from the Jap airplanes that were bombing would come down over the water and look at us. But apparently, they were out of ammo and didn't bother us at all. And we only got part way out there in the bay. We were being swept out towards the sea. There is a natural current in the base or in the bay that runs out. And I think maybe the tide was going out as well. But I'm no sailor on these things, so we made our way as best we could. And we finally found a navigation buoy in the bay and tied up to it. This was near dusk. And eventually a Navy patrol boat picked us up. On the morning of the 10th, we landed at the South Dock on Cregador. They took us up to the west end of Molina Tunnel. There, some Marine sergeant picked up 8 or 10 of us, took them to his company, and I remained a Marine for 4 weeks.
And then Corregidor falls in May of 42.
May 6th.
May 6th at that point. And were you in Malinta Tunnel then at that junction?
Oh, no. No, I had my own hole. They didn't let a private in that place. You know, I only got in that tunnel twice. The first one time was when I just got there, and the next time I just got in the West End a short ways to get a haircut.
So tell me about your remembrances of the surrender at Corregidor.
Well, I was numb. I was sick. I was tired. I don't remember a whole lot about it. I remember several of us gathered together, and there was some lieutenant from some outfit. And we walked down into the bottom side. There was an old barrio down there. San Jose or something like that it was called. But all the buildings were blown out, really. We ran into some Japs. They put us into a building, and we just stayed there for a while. Mm-hmm. Later on in the evening, they came and took us, and we went up and went into the Navy Tunnel, which was south of Malinda Tunnel. We walked all the way through this Navy Tunnel, got into Malinda Tunnel, and then they walked us out the west end of the tunnel. And they had shelled that thing so bad that the rocks were, and you had to crawl out. You had to crawl up out of the tunnel. There was a lot of trash out there. And they took a photo of us. And years later, I found that photo in the National Geographic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Coming out of the West End. There.
Yeah.
What was your disposition after the surrender on Corregidor?
Well, they kept us on that west, near that west entrance to Malinda Tunnel all that day, or all that night. The next day, they marched us around the south end of Malinda Hill over to the east side of the east entrance of Malinda Tunnel, and then on down to this 92nd garage area. It was a big concrete pad with a couple of sheet metal buildings that were pretty well shot up.
And then from the 92nd garage area, where were you transported?
Oh, I went on a couple of small work details, but I wasn't feeling all that good. Eventually, I don't know how long it took, but maybe a couple of weeks, and they took us back on that road around the south end of Malinda Hill and again to the south dock. Somehow we got into some transports that took us over towards Manila. Then I remember we got off of those transports, and they put us on some smaller boats, took us over towards the shore. And it was near Barrio Baclaran at the end of Dewey Boulevard. And we waited ashore. And they would put you in groups of 100 or so, and then they start to march you up Dewey Boulevard. And you get up to Luneta and the park up there, and then you turn to the right, and I don't know, we went over one of the bridges on, I guess, the Pasig River, and then it was a short distance on to Bilibid Prison.
And you were at Bilibid. How long were you at Bilibid?
No more than 2 or 3 days, and they took us to a railroad station, put us on in these little boxcars.
The old 40 and 8s.
Uh-huh. Yeah, about 100 men to a boxcar. And took us to Cabana Tawan. And we offloaded there, and they kept us in a schoolyard overnight. And then the next day we marched up to, it was about 15, 16 miles up to this Camp 3. Well, we passed Camp 1. They didn't stop there. And then there was another camp up another 4 or 5 miles. Camp 2, we didn't stop there, so we kept going until we got to Camp 3.
And how long were you at Cabana Tuan 3?
I stayed there till October of, October 42. Then they took us down to Camp 1. In the meantime, between the time we got to Camp 3 and then moved out, quite a few men had been taken out of the camp for various details, some of them large details, like 1,000 men or 1,500 men. And so what the NIPS were doing was consolidating the prisoners into one camp.
And did you spend the rest of the confinement at Cabana Tuan, or were you shipped out beyond that?
No. in September 43, I was sent on a detail to an airfield detail to Los Pinos, which is south of Nichols Field, just a short distance. But I was only there a couple of weeks. They decided I had dysentery, and they didn't want me, so they sent me back to Cabana Tawan number one. Mm-hmm. And I stayed there till July 44. Then I was shipped to Bilibid by truck this time. And stayed there only two or three nights, and then they marched us to the port area. And I got on a ship called the Nishu Maru. There were about 1,500 put aboard that thing in two holes. I was in the forward hole. They left Manila about, almost immediately after we got aboard, as soon as they got filled up. But we went out and parked in the bay for about 5 days. Then they left and went out to the South China Sea, and there had been a remnants of a typhoon, and that was one wild ride. 3-4 days later, we came into Taukau in Formosa. Stayed there only overnight, were formed into a huge convoy, and made our way out of Taukau at night, and got fired on by submarine. And you could hear those torpedoes in the water, but they went under us. We were quite light. And they hit a tanker next to us. But I got an interesting story about that one. When I got home, my mother had been living in an apartment house, and her neighbor in the next apartment had two sons in the service. One was in the Army in Egypt, but the other was in the Navy in the submarine service. So I told him about the incident. And so he asked me the date, or approximate date and location. And he was on the submarine that fired the...
He was on the sub.
And they were aiming for us. And they had no idea there was any POWs aboard.
And then from the Formosa convoy, where did they drop you from there?
They went to Moji in the southern island of Kyushu.
Kyushu.
Yeah.
And then how long were you in Moji?
Oh, just about a half a day. And we ran into another interesting situation there. There was about 200 of us that were selected for whatever detail we're going to go on. And they put us in a room in the railroad station. And a school teacher with a bunch of kids came in the other end of the room. I remember talking to the kids. Well, you could speak a bit of Japanese. And I was asking them for some water. And finally, one of them came over. One kid was a little more bold than the other, and he took my canteen and filled it. And pretty soon the whole class was coming over filling them. And we were starving for water. That trip on the ship was terrible. When I got to Japan, I was so dehydrated, I weighed about 95 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then where was your POW camp?
Well, they put us on railroad trains. And strange, and this is the... You never knew what they're going to do. But you're packed in like sardines on the ship. Yet you get on a railroad car, and they wouldn't let any more than two people sit in a seat. And took us to a camp. I'm trying to think. The name of the town was Futasi. And eventually we found out it was Fukuoka Camp number 10. And it was a coal mining camp. There were already 300 Javanese and Dutch prisoners and one British prisoner. I don't know how he got mixed up in that. And there was 200 of us from the American contingent. And we worked in the coal mines.
And that was in 44?
44 from, the date we got there was August. We were on sea July and August. And we stayed there until the end of the war.
And then you were taken off by 1st Cavalry, or you went down through Atsugi?
No, I left the camp. It was a long time before we were liberated. I wandered around Kyushu for quite a while and visited some of the other camps that were in the area. Eventually, on the 15th or 16th of August or September, and it was in September, I got a train that went down to Nagasaki. And there were about 30 of us in this on this train from all different camps. We're not from any particular one. And we went over the part of Nagasaki that had been bombed. But they had replaced the rail line. They had the ties down and the rails down, nailed to the ties, but they didn't have any ballast in between them. And we went across that part of the city very, very slowly, and the tracks just snaked all over the place. And Nagasaki is built in the shape of a gigantic L, and where the two legs of the L come together is where the dock area is located. We got down to the dock area, and there must have been 2,000 sailors out there, all from the USS Biloxi. And eventually we got off the thing. They'd set up showers on the dock for us, and we got cleaned up, and they gave us Navy uniforms. And then the ship captain said he wanted to meet each one of us, so they brought out a chair that looked like a throne, you know, and he sat in it, and we went from there one at a time. He asked a few questions like your name, where you're from, what camps you're in, a few things about the war, things like that. Then he said, I want to apologize for getting here so late. He said this war was moving along very smoothly. And then the Japanese surrendered and threw everything in a hell of a mess.
Was there anything left of Nagasaki?
Not in that leg of the city, no. That was the industrial leg of the city. I found out later that they were supposed to hit the other leg. But they missed it, and, well, the whole tale of dropping that bomb is something else. They had a terrible time trying to get rid of it.
When was your first time back home?
Oh, gee, I arrived here. Oh, gee, I hitchhiked all the way home. Yeah, I got there in October, late October of 45. I got to San Francisco.
Uh-huh. What was the first thing you did when you hit the States?
I remember I was just lucky to be able to walk down the, you know, I wasn't very steady, but I was just happy to get here, that's all.